Salutations, Mets fans, and welcome to this week's edition. For all you kids out there, the official podcast, your baseball prospectus Mets local site. I'm your host, Jeffrey Paternostro, and because probably Fred Wilpon questioned his toughness in a New Yorker article, I'm joined this week by Jarrett Seidler. Jarrett, how are you doing?
I've been better. I've got several large holes in my body. They tell you about the 8-inch scar, like the 8-inch like incision, but they don't tell you about like all the holes they punched to like put tubes in too, which take a while to close and kind of suck.
Does this mean you'll be available for pinch hitting or like defensive replacement stuff?
You can only bat from the left side.
Yeah. I think I've still got 6 to 8 weeks left for that.
Sure, it seems like a safe estimate.
Yeah, I am capable of plugging in my headset and recording from my lounge chair.
Are you actually going to give a quote to the beat reporters, though, that are going to subtweet you for the next 2 months about why you haven't talked to them?
Yes. And then I'll call up Nick Cellini and talk to him instead.
As you can tell, David Roth of Deadspin is also on the show because we don't want Jarrett to have to do too much heavy lifting. And David also wrote about the two main topics we'll be talking about this week. And we will start with, of course, the official announcement that David Wright will play for the Mets in 2018 on September 29th, and possibly some pinch-hitting appearances elsewhere. We have a Facebook question, actually, right at the top from Kenneth, David, that I think you are particularly well-equipped to answer. I want to get the exact quote up here.
All right. I bet it's going to be something really uplifting and cool, maybe about shirts.
Question for the pod. This is how it was all going to play out with David, and I assume everyone knew this was going to be it. Why did the Wilpons and Rico say all that stuff in the media that they said?
Fantastic question, Kenneth. because force of habit? I have no idea how they did it like this. I think it honestly is just they didn't want to have to pay him. They didn't have a better excuse than that, and you can't just say it. But
he did
did a full 20-day rehab assignment, and then they invented some sort of medical standard and had him just sit on his ass for like 10 days.
So my best guess is that this is basically a compromise between him pushing it and going to the insurance company and getting a second opinion saying I'm able to play, and them not wanting him to come back at all.
Yeah, and I think that's about right.
And it took them, 10 days to come to the compromise solution.
The idea that you need that you're negotiating this with the guy is the piece that I could not get into the story that I wrote about this yesterday. I kept putting it in parentheticals, and finally Diana was like, you could have just written a sentence. Like, this is not hard. Is it? You don't want to do it like Yankees style where there's like big, like, special Gatorade flavors for the weekend and billboards or whatever. But it is striking that even like this, like the one player, the one thing that everybody that cares about the Mets agrees on is that David Wright is a fucking saint and is the best thing to happen to this franchise in 15 years. And they still just, they couldn't let it be nice. They had to, I mean, I'm sure the day itself will be cool, but like they could have made a lot of money selling tickets and t-shirts. Like, if that's the only real concern for them, there's no reason you have to take a loss on paying a guy $1 million to play 2 weeks of baseball. Like, I would take a loss on that because I don't have $1 million, but theoretically they do. So, how is this as complicated as it became?
I mean, they're miserly. That's the, even when they had the money, they acted like this.
And it is about, I think, like establishing control to a certain extent too. Like,
that was what I settled on with it.
I think
sure.
Really since Alderson resigned, possibly somewhat of his own accord, somewhat under pressure from ownership, Dave, you're seeing
Excuse
it too
me,
with
Jeffrey,
like the...
He's on a leave of absence and they have not made a decision about whether he's coming back.
Yeah. And like the
Are they
GMs...
collecting insurance on his salary too? Is that a thing that they're able to figure out how to do?
The GM names you see and like leaked in the press are obviously from the last time Fred Wilpon bothered to care about professional baseball.
I can't believe Ben Charrington's available.
No, Ben Charrington's one of those newfangled analytics guys.
No, we need Alan Baird.
Right. I mean, he's leaking like 70-year-old scouting director
Wayne Krivsky.
Guys that haven't been GMs in 15 years, Jim Hendry.
Can I go back? Wayne Krivsky, is that really a name that you've seen? Or is that just the funniest name that you can come up with off the
that
top?
That is a publicly reported name. Yeah. So is Jim Hendry, so is Allard Baird.
Allard Baird!
Mark Atancio is in there too, I think.
How about Jack Z?
No Jack Z, surprisingly.
All right.
I mean, his. And his. We know his absolute dreamboat candidate is Mark Shapiro.
Yeah.
Which is the. I mean, that's as 90s as you can get.
Yeah. That was one that I think you could not have been more than like 72 hours out of surgery when Jair was tweeting about the Shapiro thing. It's like, of course, it's the ideal candidate for them because he's like all about making sure the owners don't have to pay for anything. And
I have to move Andre Jimenez's like ETA back to 2021.
Yeah.
God. Yeah.
From the guy most notable for holding down Vlad Guerrero Jr. all year.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to hire Corton Ferry to run the search, so yeah. Mark Shapiro is going to be at the top of the list. That's just something that's going to happen.
As a business guy, obviously we know what he's about, which is suppressing salaries and service time and stuff like that. The only reason I would be extremely bothered by him as a hire, though, is that he seems out of date. Like, he's not as bad... Like, Wayne Krivsky wasn't a good GM.
No, he's a good GM from 1999, not a bad GM. I mean, Allard Baird or Jim Hendry is,
I mean, the thing that's hilarious to me is obviously, you've heard leaks, obviously, from the Wilpons themselves, that, Fred, getting older now, really wants to... The reason they're not going to rebuild is he wants to have one more run of contention before he dies. He's in his 80s now. And,
except he's not fucking Mike Ilitch. He's not
right. It's like he's not going out there and going up against a luxury tax and, spending on Harper and,
Manny Machado.
Manny Machado.
He wants everyone to be healthy for him.
Yeah.
John Heyman today, by the way, indicated the Phillies' plan is to sign both Harper and Machado.
Yeah, sure.
Cool.
They have the money.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, every team has the money.
They're starting, five or six cost control players. Otherwise, Herrera's on a cheap extension. Kingery's on a cheap extension. Hoskins is making the minimum.
Would also open them up to trade some of these guys.
Yeah, they'll probably trade J.P. Crawford for a pitcher.
All right, you could pick some guys to trade. You could move Nick Williams. You could maybe move Carlos Santana for a pitcher of similar salary and
age. You could move Herrera if you wanted to.
Yeah, he seems to be falling out of some favor there.
You know what seems like a really good fit to me, just personality-wise, is Bryce Harper and Philadelphia sports fans.
I think that would go great.
It sort of is. I think they could embrace him. But if he gets off to like a slow start or something, they'll never forgive him. It'll be a crucial couple of weeks for Bryce if he goes there.
I mean, I don't know whether it's hard to tell whether like the Phillies fan is still like that right now too, because you've got like the psyche of how they're all Eagles fans and they just won the world the Super Bowl. And
Phillies Twitter is still kind of a little
about to jump off the bridge now.
I don't think Philly's Twitter is representative of the idiot Phillies fan that would boo Bryce Harper.
Yeah.
Well, actually.
Yeah. No, I think.
Yeah, actually.
I want to strike that statement. I feel like they overachieved this year and Phillies fans weren't as mad about it, although obviously this has been a really maddening stretch for them, and I'm sure that everybody's just as irrational as they could possibly be. I mean, the thing with this that's frustrating is that obviously the Mets, they don't need an outfielder because they got,
Austin Jackson.
Yeah, and they got a right fielder that would be blocking Harper's playing time for the next couple of years at least. But they also are going to be starting, their infield is going to be three guys on rookie scale salaries after whatever the Super 2 date is, right? Unless they somehow, is there any...
Jay Bruce might just be the first baseman in 2019 and 2020, man.
Which means
What are they going to do? Trade Peter Alonso for, Blake Treinen?
Yeah.
And say Marcus Stroman was the one that I tossed around with Javi behind home plate. Oh,
because he's local.
Local, it's kind of a challenge trade.
That's also a very Blue Jays player.
He's a very Blue Jays player. He can block Vlad Jr. for another year.
They're just vindictive enough to send him to Canada specifically to anger him.
Yeah.
What are they even mad at him for? Like, being too good? Like, making it going for them?
He's self-assured.
He likes talking.
Yeah.
He's a very good interviewer, let's put it that way.
Easy there, Vegas.
Well, that... Yeah, I mean, he's just... I mean, he's...
I mean, it's the attitude, it's you.
If I DM'd Pete Alonso, he would probably do this podcast.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
That's true.
He has done smaller Mets podcasts than ours.
Yeah, I read an interview that he did with another Mets podcast, and it was actually pretty delightful, now that you mention it.
Right.
Which, it felt to me like they were, even they, at the end of this year, felt compelled to explain themselves, which is not a very Mets...
And they did so very poorly.
Well, that goes without saying. But I mean that, like, it was the sort of thing where you can't just be like, oh, we don't think that the most productive offensive player in any level of baseball this year is ready. You know, you'd have to come up with some other shit.
The most Mets part of all of this is Omar Minaya pulling him aside, admitting off the record it's a business decision, and him immediately going to the media and saying, Omar Minaya told me it was a business decision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there's just no part of that that's not...
I mean, the most Mets part of all of this was actually them saying they were keeping him down for defense 3 days after he got the Organizational Defensive Player of the Month award.
Yes, which I know it's not, like, a real thing, but it is, like, again, as unforced errors go, that was, like...
It's something that might come up, you know, in terms of the bad faith clause in the CBA and an arbitration hearing of some sort.
Yeah,
I'm going to do 30 seconds on this. If you think teams can just do this, it's not necessarily clear that that's true. The way labor law works is not management can do anything that's not explicitly prohibited by a collective bargaining agreement. That's just not how it works. There's an implied covenant of good faith for gap filler type stuff. And there's a very good argument that certain teams have not been acting in good faith. And... baseball as a entity has very carefully made sure that none of those cases went to any kind of final disposition.
Yeah.
They've managed to settle all of them ahead of time or stall them.
You know, Chris Bryant might be the first.
Chris Bryant grievance is still pending as of the last time Mike bothered to ask someone, which wasn't that many months ago. And I think it's been publicly reported. It's still pending.
You know, there's rumors that Acuña has a grievance going around, too.
Mikel Franco has one.
Yeah.
That is still sitting around. Eloy Jimenez is going to file one. And the difference between Eloy Jimenez and the other ones, baseball has an argument to get thrown out because the players were not members of the union at the time that they got fucked with. Eloy Jimenez is on the 40. He's a union member. So that one, they're not going to be able to toss for that reason.
I assume that these are extremely difficult arbitration cases to win just because of how bad everything is.
Right. I mean, they're difficult cases of labor law. You know, that there's a lot of, you know, and Woj would be a better person to have, like, an in-depth conversation about this than me because he actually practices in that specific area. But, you know, that this is not... This is an area where things are very unclear. And the popular Twitter concept, which seems to be formed by the owners are always right and anything they say is true, that's just not... That's not how... The owners may ultimately have the winning case, but it's never been actually arbitrated in the system arbitration process.
And again, one of the reasons baseball wants to avoid it ever going to arbitration is they don't want a losing precedent on the record.
Right. If they lose the first case, then all of a sudden, you know, they don't get anything by negotiating as in the next CBA, which is their actual goal. Their goal is to get a major concession from the players in exchange
or agreeing to stop bargaining in bad faith yeah. over the course of several years.
Yes.
Yeah, that's also pretty much how labor law works.
Yeah.
Just, as you probably actually know, David.
Yeah, no. I don't have to comment on any of that at this time, of course. But yes, yeah. Of course. Like the what's frustrating to me about this from a Mets perspective, I hasten to add, is that they should be happy to have as many players on these, like the rookie, like pre-arb players in their lineup as they have. And they still have kind of a lot. They could pay their pitchers. They could pay other new pitchers or new hitters or whatever.
I mean, they could have...
pay off, or they could pay their debt service.
Well, I mean, you know, maybe that doesn't exist.
But I mean, like you said, they could roll out next year with a, you know, an infield slash battery of, you know, Kevin Plowecki, Pete Alonso, Jeff McNeil, Ahmed Rosario, and, you know, Todd Frazier is on a well below market deal as well. And, you know, with Andrés Giménez waiting in the wings behind them. And, like, those could all be above-average Major League regulars next year.
And now Wilmer Flores isn't going to make that much money in arbitration.
No, he's a non-tender candidate, Jared. Because they'll definitely spend that $5 million better somewhere else, or at all.
All these motherfuckers are saying that Wilmer Flores is a non-tender candidate are the same guys that said you couldn't non-tender Matt Harvey because he had too much trade value. It's the same people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess at least you've learned something. But
what's the argument for non-tendering Wilmer Flores? Because he's like, he's been like an above average major league player for a couple of like 2 years, basically.
You're cherry picking Baseball References WAR instead of Fangraphs WAR or BP's WARP, basically.
Wow. So that's a very actually solid argument against. I agree now that he's a non-tender candidate.
I mean, he's making 3-4 this year. He's probably going to get about a 50% raise, so he'll make, you know, probably 5-5 next year, something in that area, give or take. Maybe a little more, because he's had a lot of playing time and a lot of counting stats. But, you know.
That's fine, though. Like, what kind of major league hitter do you get for $5 million on as a free agent?
Austin
Jackson?
A lot of people are
also looking at the market last year and assuming that that kind of thing is going to repeat itself.
But, I mean, you're still really going to, like, I don't know, do you get, like, Logan Forsythe falling to you on a... I mean, Logan Forsythe is the exact same skill set as Flores, basically.
Right.
And Wilmer's already shown he can do it in New York.
Right. And the other thing is, like, it's like, oh, well, he's just a short side platoon first baseman. I mean, that's how they're using him, but he can play all four infield positions.
That's like, what's that so weird value. To me about it, that, like, they want to see whether their lousy defensive right fielder can be a less lousy defensive first baseman. Like, maybe see if, like, Wilmer can play the outfield. Or just, like, remember that he can
if
play, like,
Dom
second
Smith
and third.
In the outfield,
you know?
He can try Wilmer Flores in the outfield.
That, I mean, to me, that's, like, the ultimate in that. Like, there's nothing, neither one of them is a great runner, obviously, but, like, there's nothing in, like, Dom Smith where you see, like, he was never further up the defensive spectrum than that, so you could never guess that maybe he might be able to do it, but...
There were people that wanted to move him to right after the draft.
They said that about Ike Davis, too, right? Because he was slow, but he had a strong throwing arm.
Yeah.
Right. And Smith, at the time of the draft, was allegedly not a 20 runner.
I don't know what let's see what I had him in Savannah as. I think I have notes on this somewhere.
Yeah, I mean... But no, there was definitely an idea, and it wasn't even just a Mets idea, but there was an idea that Dom Smith would be drafted and would end up in right field as opposed to first. Dom Smith had a very different body at that time.
Yeah, that was... Well, wasn't there like 1 year where he gained a bunch of weight? It was like his second year.
There were several.
Yeah, all right. But I mean, there was when they drafted him, it was like... He wasn't, like, a lanky... Like, he had, like, James Loney's profile, but not James Loney's body.
He was,
He was always kind of a short guy with a large butt.
Yeah.
There were people that wanted to move him to catcher, too.
He was 4.57 dig as a 19-year-old in Savannah, so that's a 20.
So that's, like... Yeah, that's, like, a low 30 or high 20, yeah. Left side, yeah, yeah, 20. Yeah, I mean, there were lots of ideas on where to play him. But, you know, I think the most
damning indictment of the 2018 Mets season, outside of the one that you wrote in the article about the endless fungible relievers giving up consecutive doubles, which I think was my favorite line in the piece.
Thank you. I hate that it happened. But
the Mets have basically made both Jarrett and I extremely sympathetic to Dom Smith.
Well, yeah, he's been treated badly. Yeah. He's not a really good Major League Baseball player, but they could have at least given him a chance to prove it in a normal way.
I always liked Dom Smith. I just didn't think he was very good. I did not think he was as good at hitting baseballs for average as other prospect writers.
Sure.
You know, it's like, that was also the difference on Jeff McNeil than other people. I thought Jeff McNeil was better at hitting for average than other people did. I'm going to turn out to be right on both of them. And I'm
You're taking a victory lap on Jeff McNeil already? It's only been 6 weeks, Jarrett.
How many weeks?
6 weeks.
I'm going to turn out to be wrong on a whole bunch of other guys.
Yeah, sure.
So it's not like, you know, I'm not saying that, but... You know, I don't dislike Dom Smith. I know lots of people that know Dom Smith. Everybody that knows Dom Smith that I know absolutely loves Dom Smith.
He seems like a really sweet guy. I mean, in a different universe, he gets like slightly better or something and could have like a Wilmer Flores-y type career. I just feel like there's no, like he's been passed by Alonso.
He literally could have had James Loney's career.
Yeah. I saw a Savannah Lakewood doubleheader where he spent the entire 40 minutes in between games signing autographs and playing with kids in the stands. And he was the only guy on either team that was out there. You know, and there's lots of stories like that about him. I'm sure he's a very nice guy. I just, you know, it's a profile where if he was not a six hitter, the entire profile collapsed. I didn't see a six hit tool in his swing. And you know, maybe he eventually gets there. Who the hell knows? It's not like he's not been so bad in the majors that it's entirely impossible, but it's also, you know, how long do you wait for that profile to come together?
You know, especially at first base.
Right.
Do you think there's any chance he's with the Mets next year?
I mean, they never give up on these guys.
Devin Cicchini stole with the Mets.
I know, but I mean, like, I don't mean like, I mean either like on the major league roster or like,
I mean, Jay Bruce is going to get hurt again.
I mean, aren't they kind of playing him a little bit hurt now just for principle? Because they're trying to get to 75 wins or whatever.
He appears to like finally be healthy and he's hitting now.
Yeah, they're definitely doing that like dead cat bounce Mets thing where they're going to be like just good enough over the next few weeks. They can't sign a free agent now,
Jarrett. Now, David, they'll lose their first round pick. They're going to draft like 12th instead of 7th.
Right. But he looks, you know, he just kind of looks better. Like the bat looks like it's, you know, he's got, when he's hurt, you can usually tell in how he's swinging. He doesn't get good, especially when he has a lower body injury, he tends to get bad hip rotation. And he's finally getting good hip rotation again. So I think he's probably okay. But this is, you know, he has plantar fasciitis. That's the underlying issue. He has plantar fasciitis. He has bad knees. And those things are going to continue to be true for the length of the rest of his career. Because guys that have bad feet and bad knees don't stop having bad feet and bad knees at age 32.
If only that's there was some way they could have known.
Yeah, I mean, that's also true for, like, not baseball players, too. Like, you know,
yeah, basketball players have their careers end because they've got bad feet. I mean, if you're just, like, a bigger-bodied dude, you don't get any beef there.
Even past professional athletes, like normal dudes, when your legs and your back start going in your 30s, that's when it's hard. It just is. Yeah. And that's the risk of signing, you know, a 31-year-old...
With old player skills.
Bad defensive player with old player skills and a history of lower body injuries. You know, we said it at the time. This was the downside to the signing. The true downside is the same as the Jason Vargas downside, which is that most other teams at this point would start making alternate plans, and the Mets will just keep pushing him out there. Jason Vargas is your fifth starter next year.
Yep.
Well, it's a good thing we have four aces otherwise.
You know, he is pitching well enough now that they can plausibly sell people, and you'll see it on Twitter, people going, wow, Jason Vargas looks good now, and it's not that he looks good, it's just that he's not giving up 8 runs and 2 innings right. anymore.
Yeah, since August XX or whatever, his ERA right. is actually 3.6 whatever or something, and then...
Right, so why would we need to go out and sign J.A. Happ now? We have, you know, Jason Vargas, and he's just as good.
3.12 ERA his last 28 days, David.
There you go. I remember those 28 days very fondly. They were huge. That was because, I mean, that was like a real pivotal stretch for the team this season as well.
I mean, one of the other things is Mickey Callaway's finally realized that he just can't see on lineup the third time through. So he's been 5 and dive pretty much every outing.
Yeah, 5 starts, 26 innings.
Yeah.
Which is frustrating, too, because wasn't the argument for him that, like, he's ready to go every fifth day and he's going to give you, you know, whatever, innings? And,
yeah, that was a dumb argument at the time, but yeah. It was indeed the argument. I mean, the real argument was AL leader in wins, Fred.
Yeah.
Write that check, baby.
Had a discount as well. Right. And less for him than Jake Arrieta only won 12 games. Or...
I mean, look, if they go out and try to replace him, they're just going to sign Marco Estrada anyway, so...
This is so weird. I mean, I know that's not like an especially illuminating insight into all of this, but the right thing... more than anything was strange to me, and the whole second half of the season has just been weird. Like, they're not doing the things that you should be doing during a season when the game, you know, game by game, there's no consequence to anything you should do. Like, this would be a time when, like, any team could just be like, well, we had a bad run of it, like, we're gonna try these guys out and see, you know, who can do what in different roles. And it's like there's no argument to be made for any of the stuff that they're doing, except for, like, you know, like, we need to get Austin Jackson going or whatever. There's, like, things you can say, but this is just, there's not, like, a defensible case for any of it. They really are behaving in a way that, like, other baseball teams just do not.
Gary Cohen, this was in specific to why Jay Bruce was playing first over Dom Smith yesterday. And Gary Cohen said, it's about player development for the 2019 season. I'm just going, oh my God, they actually believe that. Like, they actually believe that it's more important to get Jay Bruce first base reps than, like, anything else. And they believe that it's more important to get Austin Jackson out there. Because Austin Jackson's going to be on the 2019 team.
Yeah.
Because he's being paid by somebody else for 2019, too.
Is he actually still?
He got a two-year deal.
He was cut in the first year of a two-year deal.
He was cut in the first 3 months of a two-year deal.
Yeah. Yes, other teams do that, David, when they
realize. Yeah, interesting. No, I didn't know it was allowed. I'm sorry. I just assumed it was illegal. The idea that... I mean, I actually don't totally mind Austin Jackson as your fifth outfielder.
Sure.
If he's your everyday center fielder, then, like, right. That's clearly a problem. But yeah, all that stuff about, like, development for 2019 or whatever, like, there's no scenario in which the team is better off for Jay Bruce being your everyday first baseman, right?
You know, and that's also why they're getting Anthony Swarzak priority innings in the bullpen, because Anthony Swarzak's going to be a key member of the bullpen. Not because he's earned it, but because he has a contract for next year. I mean, Jay Bruce could have another 2017 Jay Bruce season. That's within his capability. It's not that great. Especially as a bad defensive first baseman.
I'd rather him be a bad defensive right fielder with Nimmo and Conforto around him for an entire year. I mean, there's no advantage to not having Cespedes, but, like, that's it. Is that the logjam barely exists anymore. Ligaris plays the end of every game. You move Bruce out, and you move Conforto or Nimmo to right, and then, like, that's not bad. It's not great, but it's like, it doesn't require you adding new players.
They seem to have decided that after 2 years of fucking around with Michael Conforto as a center fielder, him getting his defense to passably average, and that was the point at which they decided they didn't want to play him there anymore.
It's weird. I mean, he never looked... I mean, Nimmo, too. I mean, they're both, like, very good athletes, and they've tried really hard. They're, like, neither one of them's great or anything.
If you but notice, like, that changeover happened right around the exact same time that Sandy went out, so... That was the point. That was right around the point where they refused to play either of those guys in center with any regularity anymore. So I'm assuming that's one of the GMs.
Take your
pick.
Which one of the
ones is supposed to be doing the evaluation on the current roster?
Or it's, you know, Mickey freed from the constraints that he was under at a previous point. because Mickey said some really fucking weird things about Austin Jackson's defense.
Yeah. Well, that's another, I mean,
Mickey's player evaluation is like really bad if you assume he's telling the truth about things when he talks to the media. Like, say what you will about Terry Collins being too veteran friendly, but at least he was usually able to figure out which ones could play and which ones couldn't.
Yeah.
Callaway's not as veteran friendly, but he's like, gets very attached to really bad players. Like that fucking one reliever they claimed off of waivers on his Chris recommendation. Beck. Yeah, and then he like kept using for a while until they had to take him away from him. Like, that was...
I mean, they're definitely signing Cody Allen for next year, just so you know.
They're absolutely signing Andrew Miller to close.
Oh, you think it's Miller and not Allen? They're going to spend money for Miller?
Because Miller's not going to cost as much as you think because he's been hurt. He hasn't been quite as dominant. But he's a big name. He's a former Yankee. He's a good clubhouse man.
When I capitalized proven and closer in the thing that I wrote, I want you to know that I had Cody Allen in mind.
Yeah, that's what I...
I didn't, but, I mean, Miller, you know, whatever, is not... doesn't seem to be what he was. I wouldn't mind that really all that much, but I don't think they're going to pay for it.
Better than some other team will get him. They're considering, probably.
Well, no, the key is they're going to sign Andrew Miller and then use him as a one-inning closer, which is exactly... I mean, that wastes 40% of his value.
Yeah.
The actual thing to do would be to sign Cody Allen and Andrew Miller.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I mean, you could just sign Andrew Miller and make, like, Swarzak your closer.
You know, if we play under the fallacy that the David Wright money was going to get reinvested in the team, you know, they're losing the first 60 days of that next year. And that's going to come directly out of the 2019 payroll. They will spend...
Do they still lose it, though, if they get him declared medically disabled? Yes. They still do because he played?
Yes, there's still a 60-day waiting period. Sure. So they're going to lose $5 million or whatever it is, and they're going to take that right out
there's
of...
There's your Wilmer Flores payroll. Money.
Yeah, seriously, they got a non-tender, a useful guy that everyone loves because he had to maintain flexibility in their...
It's a little less than five. It's actually four, but I did the math at one point, but it was a while ago. So that's coming right out of 2019 payroll.
Callaway seems awfully bad to me at this point, but I also, it's impossible to tell who's telling him what to do or why they're telling him that.
So
that's another weird thing. The season's almost over, and I still feel like, except for a few of the players, like it's like it never happened. Like the whole thing was just kind of like sleepwalking all the way through.
So I think there's two things we can say about Callaway. The idea that he was going to be some kind of tactical genius, which is what they were pushing, he ain't. In fact, he's probably below average there. I suspect he will probably get better because as the season has gone on, he's made less AL pitching coach managing mistakes. It's been like a month since he's really botched a double switch, and he was doing like two a week for a while.
He was.
The other thing I think we can say is that he's not very good with the media. Which again was something they sold you. You know, they sold you that he was going to be Tito Francona, and instead of being Tito Francona in Boston or Cleveland, he's been Tito Francona in Philadelphia. Which again, that was Tito Francona's first managing job. So, you know, but there's also, you know, Terry Francona is not Terry Francona as a fake act, as like some other managers that get credit. That's just Terry Francona. Like, that's not learned behavior.
It's the sort of thing that I think started probably wearing a lot better when his team started winning a lot. But yeah, he seems like a genuine baseball
player. Right. And, you know, Mickey Callaway has aspects of that. But I think he lacks credibility in what he's saying at this point.
Yeah.
Like, he just says so many ridiculous things for one reason or another that it's hard for people to believe him. And I don't think the media really believes him. The fans certainly don't. I don't know about the players. You know, we hear things. I don't think, you know, I think that's probably too early to tell. For now, you'd probably have to consider him in the middle on that. I don't think his players particularly love or hate him, as best as I can tell. He's just kind of there, which, to be fair, is where most managers are. That's not even a criticism, but it's like, if you're evaluating this guy based on his 2018, where is the positive? What positive can you take away? Well, you know, you can
some players developed, right? I mean, by the end of the year.
You could potentially credit him with development on Zach Wheeler. I don't know how much of that is him, how much of that is Dave Island, how much of that is Zach Wheeler's health finally coming together.
I mean, that to me seems like the easiest explanation out of any of them. Like, he's not really pitching differently. He's just pitching every time his turn comes up.
You know, his command has tightened up. He's gotten better. The splitter's gotten better. The splitter's gotten significantly better.
I mean, he's been incredibly good for the entire second half.
Right. But, you know, this was always within his capability. It's like if Tyler Glasnow suddenly started pitching good. Like, this was, that was always within, you know, Tyler Glasnow would always flash it in between injuries and so on and so forth. Whereas I would say if, you know, somebody fixed Luke Giolito, it would probably be a fucking magic show at this point. You know, Wheeler was never really healthy and bad for an extended period of time. That's where you get the, but he also hasn't been healthy for, you know, basically since, this is basically his first run of extended health since the end of 2014, which is a long time.
What's the case for, like, has Callaway explained why the young players don't play every day?
I mean,
like, even badly. I just mean, like, I assume someone's asked, right?
His explanation on Dom Smith was basically that he doesn't think Dom Smith is very good.
That I get. But, like, why does Ahmed Rosario get 2 days off every week?
Or McNeil? He's talked a lot about the young player not being used to the 162-game schedule and the young player not being used to, you know, 13 days in a row. And then people have pointed out that these guys were essentially playing that schedule, including, you know, the Arizona Fall League or instructionals.
Without the benefit of, like, good hotels or airplanes getting them from the end to the next.
I mean, the simple answer is that he really fucking thinks Jose Reyes is a good major league player. That's the simple answer. Because it's always for Jose Reyes, pretty much.
Sometimes it's for Jack Reinheimer.
That is a guy that I wanted to ask.
Jack
so Jack I don't have any answers for you.
Low-level sleeperish Mariners prospect like years ago that's bounced around on waivers a bunch, and they waiver claimed about a desperation when they needed, because they were running out of guys at AAA.
Yeah,
I remember that. Well, they
and then they called them up.
They didn't want to put like Patrick Kivlahan or whatever on the 40 man or whatever, which I'm not nearly deranged.
I mean, he's actually probably better than Jack Reinheimer. So
I'm sure he is. I mean, he can't like badly play any infield positions or something like that, but at least he's like produced some offensive.
I'm glad you guys said that. I will not put you on the enemies of Rutgers athletics list.
I didn't even know that Kivlahan was a New Jersey person.
Kivlahan played 115 games last year for the Reds, apparently.
He was a football player at Rutgers. He was a safety, and he started playing baseball in, like, June of his college year. And there were people, you know, that really bought into him as a prospect, basically under the same vague concept as Jeff McNeil, which was that his baseball age was much younger than his actual age, but he couldn't hit curveballs at the major league level, it turned out, which is usually something that happens.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's what happened to me. That's why I never really popped as a prospect.
Was he ever described anything? High Desert guy, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He had some crazy season at High Desert.
I always feel like it's got to be cool, even if you don't make it as a major leaguer, to have one of those years in your, just to go back and like look at your own baseball reference page, like years hence when you're a gym teacher or whatever, and be like, that year that I was at like Lancaster and it, 75 home runs was really, that was something, that was a special season for me. Because I bet it was. It was probably cool as hell to do that. Yeah, he did have a season where he had a like just a MVP major league line. Couple of them with the, when he was with the Mariners.
Would you like to take a guess? And this was as a football star, where Patrick Kivlahan went to high school?
It would be cheating because I'm looking at his page right now.
It is very New Jersey high school. You want to say those mods though?
Yeah.
Yeah, which is very New Jersey. I mean, that's a high school football longtime powerhouse.
That was a rival of the high school that I went to. I believe, you know, still is now that my high school is good at football, weirdly.
Where'd you go?
Ridgewood.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they were not a football power when I was there, but then overhauled themselves in that regard. Their longtime coach, like, taught me health and stuff like that, and I just thought he was kind of a, like, a tragicomic figure. But it's, he's gonna, like, whatever, they're gonna build a statue for him or something like that now, which is funny.
I mean, my high school football coach is still there and has been there since 1981 and is closing in on, like, major records. The greatest player in Lacey football history is Keith Elias.
A legend, though.
Yeah. Former Giants running back and special teams scrum, Keith Elias. I should say that. He's actually a really nice guy.
And a Princeton legend as well.
Oh, yeah. He's also the greatest player in Princeton football history.
You said he's a nice dude? That makes me happy.
He's like a religious motivational speaker now.
Okay.
Yeah, he's nice dude. His entire family was like really good football players. I went to high school with one of his brothers. I forget whether I went to the one, because he got in a bar fight with Wayne Corbett at the Jersey Shore, which was...
I swear to God, you've told this story when David's been on the podcast before.
No, but whether that's true or not, I think you shouldn't interrupt him.
Right, and I forget whether the brother I went to high school with was with him at the time, involved in the bar fight.
What a blessed sentence that is. Just start to finish. Really satisfying. You keep thinking it's over, and then pow, second encore, Jenkinson's board walk.
Yeah.
Hey, Jeff, how's it going, man?
Well, now that we're talking about New Jersey football, it's probably time to let you go, David.
Yeah, might as well. It's a pleasure to be on with you guys as ever. Jared, 1,000 years of good health to you, my dude.
Thank you.
And thank you, guys.
Welcome back. Now it's time for the second half of the show. Whatever. Before we do the second half of the show, we do housekeeping. This is For All You Kids Out There, episode 126. For All You Kids Out There is the official podcast of your baseball prospectus Mets local site. You can find us on the internet at mets.locals.baseballprospectus.com or on the mothership at baseballprospectus.com. Podcast is on iTunes. Just search for All You Kids Out There and you can listen or subscribe right there. I encourage you to do both. I also encourage you to rate and review the podcast. If you want to get in contact with the show, we're on Twitter at For All You Kids. Jarrett's on Twitter at J.A. Seidler. I'm on Twitter at Jeff Paternostro. We have a Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/For All You Kids Out There. And you can email the show at allyoukids@baseballprospectus.com.
We are probably doing our annual winter event on December 15th.
Yes, so I did post that in the Facebook group.
If that's something you're interested in,
not because it in any way, shape, or form coincides with ROH Final Battle at the Hammerstein.
And also coincides with your soccer schedule.
I will try to be slightly less inebriated when I show up this year. I make no promises.
I should probably check this ahead of time. Okay, good. It's not the same week as SantaCon.
No, that's always a good thing to check.
Yeah, I just realized it might have been. Yeah, SantaCon's the week before.
I guess okay. We also, should we say happy trails to Craig Goldstein while we're here?
Yeah. This was clearly news neither of us knew about in advance.
Yeah.
Yeah, I I assume Craig will still be on the podcast.
Yeah, probably have him on Zoom for like Dodger stuff.
Yeah, but Craig is no longer the minor league editor at BP. He's it's just
like
now
all caps freelance, like he's a Japanese pro wrestler.
He's just a random baseball Twitter guy now. Back to how he used to be.
How the mighty have fallen.
Yeah. Everything, you know, everything that's happened before happens again. And, yeah, I mean, Craig's obviously fairly instrumental to both of our writing careers, I would say.
Nah, don't let him get a big head. He's not going to listen to this anyway.
He's obviously a good friend of both of ours.
Sawson sent me the autographed copy of the Nationals magazine with his Juan Soto article in it.
Yeah, I will say Craig has the ability, which is increasingly unique, to get in arguments with people and not like care about it 20 minutes later.
Yes. He's also managed to be both a moderating influence on both of us.
Yes. So,
which is almost more impressive and rarer in this day and age.
You know, we've had some we've had some rather vociferous arguments over the years. It's, I don't think, ever substantially affected our friendship, which is, you know, more than I can say for a lot of people. I'm so, basically like, saying Craig's a good guy and we like Craig.
Craig will be missed, although he's not really functionally going anywhere.
Right, yeah. I mean, yeah. He just doesn't have to, you know, edit 2,000 words of garbage from our interns, basically, when he, you know, doesn't desire to.
We do have an email this week. It is from Jeremy. Fellas, feel free to pass over this if verboten, but I've long wondered about Jay Horowitz and his role with the org. By any account I've seen, he's beloved by the media and players.
Oh, no.
Presumably the org loves him too, since he's been around forever. So where does he fit in with the never-ending parade of boneheaded PR gas by the Mets as a whole? Does he get a pass because he's such a lovable character? Is he not involved with the countless poor medical releases, statements by management, players, and ownership? I just don't get the paradox. The Mets have the most lovable PR man in the league, but are rightly pilloried for being the worst at PR itself. Care to shed any light on this? Thanks and best wishes to Jarrett. I wrote Jeremy back and said, we can probably figure out a way to answer this.
First of all, thank you. Jay Horowitz is an old school PR man. This is what a lot of PR dudes were like in like the glory days of baseball.
Sure.
When you'd cover up Mickey Mantle's bad behavior. So that means he's fiercely protective of the players and some of the staff. He is very cozy with some media outlets. Listen, you can find people that absolutely fucking hate Jay Horowitz.
Rob Castellano came out of Twitter hibernation to in the Rob way, and Rob's never mean on Twitter, say less than complimentary things about his interactions with Jay.
You know, there are media outlets that he repeatedly refused to grandchild. You know, we're not one of them, by the way. BP's not one of them. BP's credentialed us whenever we've asked.
And I mean, functionally, in the last 5 to 10 years, he hasn't really been responsible for that kind of day-to-day stuff anyway.
Sure. You know, the late Shannon Ford was doing a lot of that. They have other people that are doing it now. You know, but, you know, he's, you know, there's, you know, the funny stories of him butt-dialing people. There's the less funny stories of him calling reporters to yell at them.
Yes.
which are very plentiful. You know, I think the Mets have not handled listen, there was a time Jay Horowitz has been in his job for 35 years, and it's a job that requires you to be very attached to the media as it evolves. And I think there was probably a point where it evolved fast on.
Yeah.
I don't know that, you know, basically the creation of the baseball 24-hour news cycle, I don't know that the Mets ever really adjusted well to that.
Yeah.
You know, you used to be able, you know, it was in the next day's papers or in the next morning's 2020 on WFAN or on, you know, the 11 p.m. news and then the 7 a.m. news. So you used to have, like, time to, like, work these things out with the reporters and, like, come up with these narratives and so on. And so now everything's on Twitter and everybody's yelling about it 30 seconds later.
Yep.
And I don't think that the Mets have really ever adjusted very well to that. Which makes it seem like they're disorganized and don't have their act together.
Which, I mean, is also because true to a certain extent.
They're disorganized and don't have their act together. I don't know how much of that you can put on Jay specifically.
Sure.
I don't, you know. Again, you know, we have all these funny stories about, you know, Jay Horowitz's problems with Twitter and cell phones and stuff like that. You know, he wasn't the guy that should have been in charge of that for the Mets. And he probably hasn't been for a while, realistically. I don't know that, you know, I think they're probably making more out of his title transition than actually is. Like, he's functionally going to be doing a lot of stuff he's already been doing for a while.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff that was on his job title, he maybe hadn't been doing as much of for a bit. So, from that perspective, you know, he's obviously a large figure in franchise history just because he's been there so long.
He's going to end up in the Mets Hall of Fame.
Right. You know, he has a bobblehead. He, you know, everybody knows him. You know, do you know the PR guy for the Red Sox offhand?
No.
Right. But, like, everybody knows Jay Horowitz, sure. Like, throughout baseball.
I mean, that's like a throwback, too, to, like, the, you know, small, because he's been there for so long, like the small front office days and like the handshakes and cigars and,
right,
you know,
right.
Now you have these huge media apparatuses for all these teams.
Essentially, at the time that he started, the entire front office was him and Frank Cashin.
Yeah.
I did. I have to tread carefully here, too. A lot of the stories they were telling about him and his interactions with players that were being told as ha-ha laughs were not things that, that if they had happened in 2018, would have been ha-ha laughter.
Right.
Which is maybe a sign of how much things have changed. And, you know. But that was something that struck me a bit. Like, you know, the Doc Gooden stripper stuff and,
sure,
you know, John Franco, I mean, essentially repeatedly physically assaulting him. Like, that kind of stuff, if that happened now.
Well, I mean, look what happened with Manny Ramirez and the traveling secretary in Boston a few years ago.
Right, even that was 15 years ago now.
Is it that long? Jesus Christ.
It was traded in 2004.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Where does the time go?
2008. Geez. All right. Sorry. So it was 10 years.
Still longer than I thought on the top of my head. But I mean, he's like eligible for the Hall of Fame now, so.
Yeah. You know, it just kind of, you know, and you can say times are different, but, yeah. It's also an aspect of bad behavior. It's just bad behavior. We just hear about it now.
Sure.
And, you know, they were all making jokes about how Jay should write a book but can't.
Mm.
You know, he's also, at the end of the day, his job was to be protective of the team and the ownership group, and
sure,
you know, by that account, given a lot of things he probably did about his,
you know, I don't even know how to evaluate those things. You have a Facebook question from Matthew. Question for the pod. First of all, great to hear Jarrett's operation went well. I know I share that with all the other listeners and your guy in season ticket renewals who, let's face it, has a tough sell. With the year the Mets have been having, it's hard to have hope with an ownership who thinks the answer to everything is more Wilpon. With that in mind, I started to consider potential deals with the devil that would rid me of the Wilpons and restore something resembling hope to my Mets fandom. I'll pose the question in a hypothetical situation. Imagine that Jeffrey, Jarrett, and Satan were sitting down drinking old fashions when the devil proposes a deal. When can you actually drink again?
Not until I'm off of the blood thinners and the beta blockers, which is probably a month or two. All
right, there you go. He'll make the Wilpons sell the team, but he wants something in return. Imagine the new owners are competent, will have proper payrolls, and resource the team commensurate with the market. What would you give up to take the devil's deal? A winning season? We're not getting any of those. A postseason appearance? An appearance in the NLCS? A World Series appearance? A World Series win? What will it take for the devil and you to shake hands? And no, before Jeffrey asks, there's nothing he can do for Sheffield Wednesday. Hey, we came down from 2-0 against Stoke today to get a point. Only four off the top. This won't last. They'll get torn apart as soon as they face a good team. Personally, I'd probably, at this point, give up anything short of a World Series win to see the back of them. But I was wondering what you gentlemen and listeners thought.
Well, so the essential question is, would you give up 2015?
Sure. I guess that's a good way to look at it.
Because that's, you know, that, and then we've discussed this with Howard, and we've discussed this with other people, but that run is financially what allowed them to keep the team.
Sure.
So, you know he, comfortably at least.
He snaps his fingers. They lose two out of three that weekend around the trade deadline, and the Nats end up winning the division by a couple games.
Or, you know, Jacob deGrom gives up the one hit he could never give up in game five, and he was there. Or,
sure.
You know, Don Mattingly picks a reliever that's not Pedro Baez to face right.
Sure.
You know, you can come up with lots.
There's a lot of what ifs on that run, yeah.
There's a lot of inflection points, or, you know, the Cubs don't decide to just really suck in the NLCS. Or, you know, they trade Daniel Murphy when he makes homophobic comments.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of what ifs there.
I mean,
this is a tough question.
Yeah.
Because they're kind of...
We didn't really talk about this with David, so I guess we should get into it a little bit here. I mean, we talked about it sort of obliquely, but it seems very clear that, like, Fred Wilpon is basically, I think as I put it in the Facebook group, taking the keys to the car away from Jeff, and Jeff is... Or someone in that camp is complaining to Puma of the Post about it.
So here's another question. If the reason that Jeff has, or Fred has been so adamant about keeping the team, that he wants to hand it off to Jeff, and he no longer thinks that Jeff is a capable baseball man, is it possible that he actually gets rid of the team at some point?
I mean, is that actually the reason here? Or is this just, you know, he's doing his once a decade, like, little routine about...
I mean, so the leak from the Fred side...
Yeah.
Is that he thinks that Jeff has gotten too into analytics, by analytics. Yeah. Right. And is no longer making sound baseball decisions.
What a mess. I still don't think he sells the team, though. Like, why he still... Because he still thinks he can, like, shepherd the ship, and he's going to do that until he dies. And then it's going to be, like... Functionally, it's going to go to Jeff anyway, so...
You know, he can leave it as well, the team's to
oh
be sold.
Oh, my God, you're Ben Will. That would be...
That's happened.
Oh, I know.
Ownerships before.
I'm well aware.
You know, the team is willed to be sold.
I don't see it getting to that point, but...
These things can get ugly between the elderly team owners and the kids.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't...
It did with the Lakers, certainly.
You know, New Orleans Saints.
Isn't there another team, too, that's like...
You know, sometimes these things end up in court.
It's like a baseball team right now where that's an issue, right? Where someone's...
The Orioles.
That's right, yeah.
The league literally doesn't know who's running the Orioles at this point.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
I think the Mets set number 7 hitter just put them up against Boston.
I mean, you know, Brandon Nimmo's good. Can we say that pretty?
Yeah. You know,
Brandon Nimmo is probably a 6.
Oh, yeah, at least. Brandon Nimmo, yeah. By Baseball Prospectus's warp, is like a top 20 position player in baseball, last I looked.
I mean, that's the Shinsu 2 package,
yeah.
Basically. You know?
Dude's got a 900 OPS.
You know, speed and defense and right, on base heavy.
20 home runs.
You know? Yeah. And there's no reason this season's not repeatable for him.
No, no, he hasn't.
These are all skills that he has.
Yeah, this is like this is the exactly what you thought the good outcome would look like with him as a prospect.
Right, and I was always a little more of a believer on him.
270 with walks and 20 home runs.
Right, you know, this is, you know, he's not going to be this good every year, but this kind of performance, this kind of shape is repeatable. You know, he's made
years where it's more like 240 with an 800 OPS and stuff like that.
You know, he's made adjustments as time has gone on.
He's looked better against lefties. Like, he's not great, but he's playable.
Right, his pitch recognition's gotten even better as time has gone on. It was already very good. You know, this is guys develop late. Guys don't develop linearly. Like, we do like this one size fits all prospect analysis, and you know, for all we turned his, you know, being from a nowhere baseball facility and having a weird skill set and having a wrong looking skill set for his body.
Yeah.
You know, that's like, you know, there was always obviously some, you know, not to rip off a column name, but there was clearly some projection left here.
Yeah.
And people were just ignoring it.
Well, it's like at a certain point, and I fell into this trap towards the end of his minor league career. It's like, you keep waiting for it, and at a certain point, it's like, well, is it coming or what?
He was 22 and doing fine in the high minors.
I know,
like,
but...
You know, he got... He was a victim of prospect fatigue.
Sure.
Like, serious victim of prospect fatigue. Like, because, you know, it was just like he was, you know, the 12th
pick. I mean, shockingly, the Mets also jerked him around in his first 2 major league opportunities.
Right, and, you know.
I mean, they sent him down the first week of the season this year.
They sent Wheeler down, too.
I know.
And, you know,
they're not great self-scouters, Jarrett.
No, they don't believe in these guys.
They don't.
I'm still not convinced they believe in Jeff McNeil. You know, and... Jeff McNeil's not going to hit 340. He's not. Jeff McNeil's not an 8 hitter, but he doesn't have to be a good player. If he's a 6 hitter,
yeah.
You know, if that's a 6 or a 7 hit tool, if he's a 300 hitter, if he's a 310 hitter.
He's a roll 6?
Well, it might even be a roll 7.
No, let's take it easy.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, if he's like legitimately a 310 hitter, it's a roll 7.
Yeah.
You know, he's a perfectly fine... I never understood the slagging on his defense.
He's an average defensive second baseman.
He's way more athletic than he gets credit for.
He was probably, like, plus there before the 30 pounds and myriad lower body injuries, but...
You know, and there's, you know... as if you recall from Daniel Murphy would be tremendously streaky within seasons, and that's probably going to happen to McNeil too, and he's probably going to have a 1-for-26 that causes everybody to go, oh, this sucks after all. And you know, the injuries are still a concern.
Sure.
You know,
but anyway, I talked about this with Alex last week. I think their particular situation, like with, you know, you can tender Wilmer Flores and he would be a capable second baseman. You know, Andres Jimenez might be ready by the end of next year for some sort of middle infield spot, if not before then. You can give him 2019.
I think it's a huge mistake if they don't at this point. You know, and, you know, if he comes out and he's hitting 220 on, you know, June 15th, you know, you can move him back to a sixth infielder role. That's fine, too. And he still might end up being a utility guy longer term. He might be Ben Zobrist, too, you know?
Yeah. Have we actually answered Matthew's question in there? I don't even remember.
And Ben Zobrist, by the way, is a terrible comp most of the time, but it's actually a decent comp here because he developed way late, too.
Yeah.
You know, that's... I hate Ben Zobrist comps. This is the one time it might actually work.
Yeah, the late power spike, too. Again, it hasn't really shown up. I mean, all his home runs have been bombs. He just has... It's like the how far versus how many... Raw versus game power discussion.
He's talked about how he's specifically choking up for bat control and not trying to hit home runs like he was in Bingo in Vegas. That's just, I mean, and this was always, you can't teach that level of bat control.
No, you can't.
He has absolutely elite bat control, and he always has. He just didn't have anything else for a long time.
And he really didn't have the physical strength to do much with it,
and you know,
and then he
is it that surprising that you know, a guy that was a high level amateur golfer has elite bat control? It fits with the profile,
sure.
So you know, he's not, again, we're not sitting here and saying he's Ben Zobrist, but you know, if we look back in 3 years and it, you know, he turns out to have actually legitimately been an all-star, I won't be shocked either at this point. And I wouldn't have been that shocked when he got called up either.
Yes, we're well aware.
The podcast already know. You know, you can't accidentally hit as well as he did in the minors this year. You just can't.
I mean, especially, like, I think this wasn't like a Josh Rodriguez situation either.
No.
But he had never really had exposure to the high minors. So age, regardless, it was still a new level for him.
Right, he had had that weird, like, month in Vegas.
Yeah, the end of last year.
A week in Binghamton, and... Yeah, I'm probably writing about this for the 10-pack this week, but he's a good reminder that these things are not one-size-fits-all. You have to look at the individual player and evaluate the individual player. And, you know, whatever your dogmatic rules are about prospect evaluation, about player evaluation, and teams fall into this too. You know, we've made fun all the time of the Mets' quote statistical quotas and
so organizational on and so benchmarks.
Forth. Right. Like, you just have to look at the individual player. You know, all of us saw Jeff McNeil pretty early in the season.
Yeah.
And it was obvious.
It was obvious something had changed.
It was obvious the body didn't look anything like it had looked, you know, previously. He had suddenly gained, like, 4 grades of bat speed, essentially. Like, just pretty much out of nowhere. And that stuff does happen. It's been happening more lately, too. So to ignore it at this point is just, like, I mean, you know, we've written articles about it. Kind of look at Daniel Murphy.
Sure. You know, and that's the comp that apparently I made to him in 2014, so.
But it was a much different comp.
Right.
But, yeah, look at Justin Turner after being a marginal waiver quality player for 4 years in the majors, all of a sudden turns into the best hitter in baseball, nearly the best hitter in baseball in one offseason.
Yep.
You know. And that's not an exaggeration. Justin Turner, like, legitimately has been that good since he went
to the Dodgers. I remember he had 162 game stretch from, like, midseason to midseason where he had, like, a higher weighted runs created plus than Trout or something.
Yeah, since he went to the Dodgers. Now, he hasn't been healthy.
Right.
But this is over 604 games. The 304, 383, 506 hitter in Dodger Stadium. That's a 141 OPS plus.
That's a pretty good.
Almost the best hitter in baseball.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, that's a guy, now over his previous four, you know, parts of 5 seasons in the majors, let's add up this one, come on, you know, so over 232 games prior to that in majors, he was a 254, 324, 354 hitter, and his minor league time was also representative of that kind of player. you know, Ozzy Albies, Jesus, like, dude, you know, you've just got guys coming out of nowhere.
No, I mean, this does happen. It happens to Mets recently a lot, and they generally let them walk, so hopefully they won't do that with Jeff McNeil.
Well, they have him under team control through 2025.
I joke, you know, we joked earlier in the year. I did it in a 10-pack where he was just going to leave as a minor league free agent and hit 20 home runs with the Cardinals, but hopefully with the Mets instead.
You know, if the Mets had been in peripheral contention, they never would have traded Cabrera and called him up.
Right.
You know, he might have come up in September in a bench role.
Mm.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure there'll be more Jeff McNeil chat in the weeks to come. I did promise that Craig that I wouldn't let you get agitated on this show. So.
Yeah, I'm not supposed to do anything that raises my dander or for at least a few weeks.
That's why I let you talk about Jeff McNeil, and we'll do it again next week on another edition. For all you kids out there.